a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. Big thanks, as always, to tuning in. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. You can read me at KSLSports.com. And, of course, subscribe and like our page in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts for the Jazz Notes Podcast. Certainly helps us grow this podcast a little bit more and reach some more jazz fans. Today, I'm talking to Christian Winfield from the New York Daily News. I actually talked to him a few months ago. He wrote an article about maybe the Nets or even the Knicks possibly pursuing Donovan Mitchell at some point if he becomes available. But he's kind of at the epicenter of what's going on right now in the NBA, which is Kyrie Irving is or has been pushing back against the kind of leadership in the league about what the return to Brooklyn is going to look like. He has said he wants to see the season canceled altogether. Looks like they've backed off that a little bit. There were rumors that he had talked about wanting to start his own league. It kind of sounds like that got disproven. But I just kind of wanted to talk to Christian about everything going on with Kyrie, get some understanding of who he is as a person and what he's actually like, because I think there's one perspective of people who have only followed Kyrie's career but don't know him, and I would put myself in that boat. And then people who have actually worked very closely with him and the players that have played with him that seem to have a high respect for him, even though he's kind of run himself out of a couple of cities. So here's my conversation with Christian Winfield. So welcome to our next guest. I've had him on the podcast before. He covers the Nets and the NBA for the New York Daily News. You can find him on Twitter at Chris Splash. It is Christian Winfield. Christian, thanks for jumping on again.
Thanks for having me. It's nice out, so I don't mind hopping on and talking some hoops with you.
So let's talk about Kyrie. You had a nice article in the New York Daily News a couple of days ago about Kyrie, who's been kind of the central figure in not slowing down the NBA's return, but kind of questioning the plan that the NBA has of bringing 22 teams back, what it means in light of the protests that are going on across the country, what it means in light of the safety of the players. First of all, before we get into that, what kind of a person is Kyrie, having been with him for, what, half of a season now?
It's a tough question to answer, just given, you know, everything that he's been through from, you know, orchestrating his way out of Cleveland and committing to Boston and then leaving them for Brooklyn, and then reports that come out about him, you know, not getting along well with his Celtics teammates, and Celtics teammates come out. And then if you think about it, just like 2 weeks into his time with the Nets, there was that ESPN piece that Jackie McMullen had written about him, and having how Kyrie has tendencies of doing things. I think there was something along the lines of made Nets executives queasy. Was that the word? I think that was the word that they used. Queasy. I'll never forget that. I mean, covering Kyrie is different. Obviously, he's only played 20 games, so I haven't had very many extended conversations with him, at least not post-game. But, you know, whenever anyone asks me what's it like covering Kyrie, what's it like, what is Kyrie like, you know, I think about one time where we were, you know what a scrum can be like when you've got 20, 30 people jockeying for position trying to ask the same guy a question. And now this is Kyrie Irving in Brooklyn. So what I thought media scrums were like last year, it's double now. So it's post-game, and everyone's trying to ask Kyrie a question, and there's a woman there. She's trying to get this question in, and you know with scrum, you know scrum culture, that the scrums can go like that, and if you don't get your question in and you don't get an answer to the story you have to write, or to the question for the story that you're trying to write, you're kind of asked out. So this woman is trying to get her question, and we've got different guys just like, you know, speaking over every time. So one guy hops in and Kyrie says, you know, you can get your question in, but we've got to let the lady speak after this. And, you know, just that's something that just shows what type of person he is, what type of character he has. I know there's a lot of different reports about who he is and what he stands for and whatnot, but this is a guy I find him to be really genuine. I find his actions to be worthwhile, you know, and I think that where he's coming from is a place of, you know, just speaking up for other. I think it's always getting swept under the rug, but this guy is the VP of the players union for a reason, right? It's not like he's just making stuff up, you know. Just a day after or 2 days after the reports came out, Adrian Wojnarowski goes on ESPN and says, hey, you know, I think Kyrie is talking for more players than we had anticipated. Obviously he is. He's not just blowing steam out of himself, you know. But I also think it's just a byproduct of everything that's going on in the world. We've got the NBA trying to restart in the middle of a global pandemic, in the middle of what seems to be one of the biggest showings of unity this country has had in the wake of George Floyd's death, and just everything coming together. I think Kyrie is like, you know, let's find a way to seize this moment and really make the best out of it. So I think it's coming from a sincere place. I think he's truly trying to represent and do the right thing. I just think sometimes those arrows can kind of get crossed up with his past, and that's kind of unfortunate.
Christian, how is Kyrie different than you expected? Because I'm guessing, let's say 90% of league media and fans kind of have one perspective of Kyrie who have never really dealt with him directly. And then once you did deal with him, how did your opinions change?
I just got into covering the NBA in 2015, right? I started covering the Knicks really quickly out of college, and then I started covering the Nets not too long ago. So aside from Carmelo Anthony when he was on his way out the door in New York, I never really had any real interaction covering stars, right? This is my first year, and I guess I didn't really this year, right? Kevin Durant didn't play. Kyrie Irving has barely played. But I expected some of these guys to be a little stuck up. You know, I expected them to kind of be, you know, these are superstars. These guys make 140-something mil. Kyrie's probably signed up with a $146 million contract. Yeah. I was expecting him to be, you know, kind of have his nose up, maybe a little arrogant, and that just wasn't the case at all. When you ask him a question, he's the type of guy who, if you ask him a question and he doesn't necessarily understand it, he'll say, can you repeat that, instead of feeding you some man? Because, you know, some guys, you could be in a locker room and some guys will just feed you an answer that they've heard or that they were told. You know, he's a guy who's very thoughtful and intentional in what he wants to say. And that's another thing. You know, he's very cognizant of the fact that words can get twisted you know how it goes with media. We can report something and then another outlet can take that and twist the words and turn it to an entire different thing that we didn't even write. He's cognizant of all that. He's very intentional with the words that he uses. So covering him in the short period of time that I had, and that's just that doesn't go away from just what he does on the basketball court. Barclays Center feels like a completely different place this year than it did last year, just because of the energy Kyrie brings. I mean, his first game, guy comes in there, goes for 50, almost pulls an and-one mixtape move and hits a game winner on Josh Okogie. It didn't happen to drop, but every time he steps on the court, you have that electricity. And then when you just get to talk to him after the games, he's just a guy who's I would say he's a little more humble than I had anticipated, just given his background, where he came from, and just what he's able to do out there. He's a joy to cover, honestly, and it's great to watch him as well.
I think that's good for people to recognize and good for people to hear, because, you know, I wrote the story about Kyrie, what was it, last Friday night, when kind of that call happened, right? And all the conversations started to talk about him, and everyone says, well, not surprising, you know, what Woj had the tweet that he called Kyrie the disruptor. I do think there's that perspective of Kyrie. I do also wonder if one of the reasons why he is in a leadership role in the NBA Players Association is because he's not afraid to speak against LeBron. He has shown a history of, and he's done it with his actions. He left the Cavaliers to not play for LeBron. I wonder if he does represent a big percentage of the league that says, hey, not everything LeBron says is golden and is gospel. We don't need to follow everything LeBron says. There's a lot of opinions.
You know, when you say that, it just takes me back to free agency. Each of the last 2 years, where LeBron didn't get Kawhi this year, even though some people thought he was going to lure Kawhi to Los Angeles. He didn't get Paul George in L.A. the year before that. You know, it's people don't necessarily, and that's not to say that LeBron is still not one of the most likable guys or guys that people want to play with, but there doesn't seem to be that mad rush of players who want to play with LeBron or bow down to LeBron. People want to overtake him. If he's the king, people want to take that crown and put that on for themselves. And I think that, and that's just in basketball terms, you know, it also goes back to the sensitive nature of a return to play. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be about social justice, even though I'm very much so a proponent of the NBA doing something in that regard. You know, the coronavirus is very real, and we're seeing, you were just talking about it in Utah, second wave, this is all over the place. Florida, if you look at the numbers up there, there's an uptick, it seems, across the country. It might even be outside of the country as well. And a lot of guys are still concerned about going back to play in this environment. You're going to be in a bubble where you can't leave. What happens if someone – that what I found really concerning was that tweet from the health manual about an expected number of coronavirus cases in the bubble. Well, why isn't that number zero? So I think there's a good level of skepticism about that return. And I think guys want to be safe. You got to understand there's so many different layers to this equation. What if somebody gets hurt in a return to play? You think about guys like Donovan Mitchell or Jason Tatum, who have these massive contracts coming up. What if Donovan Mitchell goes to the Orlando bubble and then tears his ACL? Right? Worst case scenario, now are the Jazz not going to pay? And there's so many different levels to this whole equation. I think that it was right of Kyrie to kind of throw a red flag on everything, just because it just also seems to be moving so fast. Once a little bit of news came out, then everything came out. Now we've got 100 and whatever page health manual on the situation that also seems to have some holes in it. I think Kyrie raised some proper cautions. He made some, it sparked a wider conversation. And now I think people are really trying to put an emphasis on, okay, well, are players going to be safe, and what are we going to do? Because at the end of the day, the other side of that coin is a return to basketball is absolutely going to take the focus off of all the social justice efforts going on across the country. Doesn't matter what the NBA does before a game, if they want to have some type of statement before every single game. At the end of the day, everyone is going to be talking about who won what game, who dunked on who, who's going to win the championship, right? It happens every year. So I think Kyrie, on top of that, is also trying to make sure that we don't squander this moment that we have. And we have to be thankful that somebody is doing that, because it seemed like all the momentum was gearing up towards going to Orlando. And now we have a bigger, broader conversation.
Yeah, I mean, even if, I guess, if all Kyrie accomplishes is just to get the league to slow down a little bit and just say, hey, we really need to pay attention. We really need to focus on this. I think that's successful, and I think that's a good thing that Kyrie's doing. And you know what? A testament to LeBron also that he does have people who speak out against him, and he doesn't always get his way, whether that's, you know, getting free agents or whether that's, you know, Kyrie speaking out against him in these types of situations, if that's how we're interpreting it. LeBron doesn't, you know, take his ball and go home. He continues to find a way to progress. So, and I think that's good. The NBA needs good leadership, and I think LeBron's absolutely one of the best player leaders the league's ever had. But he also kind of seems to allow there to be room for people to speak out against him without him making it personal or throwing a pity party for himself. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why LeBron's been so good and why the rest of the league does respect him, even if they don't always agree with him.
For sure. And now that I think about it, you know, if you think on it, two of the more prominent voices in this entire situation, obviously you've got Kyrie, but you've got Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley. Those are two Lakers, yeah. Right? So does this platform become available for them to talk and really express their views if Kyrie doesn't say something on that phone call? I think at the end of the day, that's what it really boils down to. He's giving players and his peers a platform to voice their concerns. Look at that. Dwight Howard is talking about he's not going to play until there's some type of resolution. Well, if there's no resolution and the Lakers are going back to or going down to Orlando to play, is Dwight Howard ready to not win a championship in the only year he may ever win a championship? There's no guarantee the Lakers are going to win next year. There's no guarantee Dwight Howard is going to be on the team next year. So I think what Kyrie has done is just given, like I said, a lot of guys a platform to really voice some of those concerns. And you even saw some of the reports. Some guys weren't comfortable speaking up because they didn't know. They didn't want any hit back on what LeBron and everybody else is trying to do and continuing the season. So it's just, I'm always a fan of everyone having a voice and really just having their concerns heard, and it seems to be that's what's the case at this point.
What's Brooklyn's opinion. What do you think the franchise, the organization, the team, the media covering it, what do they think of this return? Because, you know, the Jazz are in a weird spot. They could realistically win a first-round series, maybe make a push into the second round. Who knows? Brooklyn is in the seventh seed.
Yeah.
They're probably going to make the playoffs because they're, what, 5.5, 6 games up on the Washington Wizards. Like, yeah. There's not really going to be a major shakeup in the Eastern Conference playoff picture. But if you don't have Kyrie and you don't have Kevin Durant, the odds of you making a push is very slim. What is Brooklyn thinking about kind of this return?
Well, they have a lot of fish to fry in this return. Number one, the Nets still don't have a head coach, right? And Jacques Vaughn is the interim head coach. He's the only undefeated coach in the NBA. I might add it to another after taking over for Kenny Atkinson. And the Nets have a decision to make. Do they want to keep Jacques Vaughn long term, or do they want to replace him with someone like Mark Jackson or maybe Tom Thibodeau? I don't know if that's a guy who they're even looking at. Maybe they want to replace him with someone who has a little bit more of a championship pedigree. Maybe they want to try to lure Greg Popovich away from San Antonio. I don't know. But they can't come to that conclusion until they see what Jacques Vaughn has to offer. We've heard from Sean Marks and from other reports that the Nets are going to give Jacques Vaughn every opportunity that they can, that he has to win that starting job. And if he's able to pull an upset over, I don't know, maybe number two Toronto, depending on where they finish, maybe Boston, whoever they draw, he doesn't have to get to the second round. If he's able to make that first round convincing as an underdog and maybe even pull the upset, that's a win in his book. So that's order of business number one. The Nets need to see if Jacques Vaughn is the head coach. Number two, they've got to see who's got game. This team is not built to be a championship contender if you're building a team around Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Those are your two stars. You need role players at every position. You need guys that know what they're going to bring, what's expected of them, and can deliver. The Nets still have question marks in that department. They still need a power forward. You've got DeAndre Jordan and Jared Allen, a little bit of a power struggle there. Spencer Dinwiddie's a backup point guard, but they need some shooters. It's really kind of an audition for this Nets team right now, just like it's been all season. Who's going to make the cut and who's kind of going to get traded? You see the Bradley Beal rumors out there. Well, a lot of these guys are playing for their lives in Brooklyn because they could end up getting traded to D.C. or anywhere else. Those are two things. That's kind of what the Nets have to play for in this Orlando bubble. And they'll also be able to scout out some of the other teams and see who's good. It's going to be really interesting. I can't wait to kind of see what it's like, because that bubble supposedly is going to, well, it's not supposedly, a lot of teams are going to be able to just sit in the stands and watch some of these games. So it's going to be some team bonding. We might see some guys trying to lure other players to the team. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But as it pertains to the Nets and returning to play, they've got a head coach situation to worry about and really just determine who's going to be on that roster and make sense next to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, which is really tough because I haven't seen Kevin Durant play a game yet.
Yeah, so is that the priority, to shake it up before they even get this kind of group together? Because it's a super versatile group, a lot of really talented players. Do they feel like they need to have a third star, which nobody in the NBA really has right now? A lot of teams have two guys, the Lakers, the Clippers. Nobody has three guys anymore.
My feeling is whoever gets that, whoever, we'll call it Bradley Beal. If Bradley Beal is traded to a contender, my feeling is that contender is going to be strong favorites to win the championship. You don't want to send him. If you're the Nets, you don't want him to go to any other team. If you can't have him, you don't want anybody else to have him. And the Nets have one of the most convincing packages you can offer. You can start a trade offer with Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Torian Prince, rookie Nick Claxton, and picks. You can take your pick of those and first round picks, and you can potentially get a third player. I mean, Bradley Beal, only person who's averaging more points per game right now in the NBA than Beal is James Harden, and no one's averaging more points than Beal since January 1st. I mean, this is a guy who scored 50 points on back-to-back, in a back-to-back, and then came and the Nets went down to DC and he lit them up for 30-something the next night. Like, the man is a monster, and that's something. Now, do the Nets need Bradley Beal to get over the hump? I don't think so. I think this is a team where if you plug in, I think their main issue right now is that four spot. Torian Prince, really humble guy, but it's just not the best fit. They need someone who's a little bit bigger, who can bang with bigger bodies, and who can really be consistent from that three-point shot. Torian Prince himself will tell you he hasn't been consistent this year. So that's their main concern right now, is really addressing that four and really getting some more adequate shooting. They're going to have to re-sign Joe Harris at some point. Caris LeVert, a lot of people are banking on him in Brooklyn being that third star. But if you look at the timelines lining up, Caris LeVert is still young. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant have a 2, maybe 3-year window if KD opts into that fourth year of his contract. So it's really a timing thing. If the Nets young players can kind of hit that development curve now and be ready to win next year, then maybe they don't need that third star. But if you just look at what Sean Marks did not too long ago, first he trades D'Angelo Russell, then he gets Kenny Atkinson out of here. This is not a team that has a lot of patience. They understand that their window to win is now, and if Bradley Beal is going to put them over that hump because they don't have a third star, they're going to do it.
All right, Christian, last question. Does it feel like the Knicks are starting to do a couple of things right? I know it's been a while since that's been the case, but honestly, it seems like Leon Rose is bringing in a pretty good staff. I know he hired a guy who I really like a lot. I mean, personally, I like him a lot, but I think he's good at his job also, in Walt Perrin from the Jazz. Right. They've gone out, they've gotten some scouts from, New Orleans, who have clearly done a very nice job kind of building up that franchise. What does it feel like Leon Rose is doing a better job finally?
Yes. And you know, I think there are a set of optics that go around. You know, obviously I understand that coaching interview candidates get leaked for a reason, right? Like, we know that the Knicks want us to know who they are interviewing, right? So we know that they want us to know they're interviewing Ime Udoka. And I think they set to interview somebody else that I saw today. But I'm happy that they are, for the most part, aside from James Dolan's silence on social issues. Obviously, the Knicks were the last team to make a statement. I think the Spurs were the last team, but Greg Popovich had already been talking on his own, so they were kind of sharing his statements. The Knicks were the only team that didn't do any type of statement whatsoever. That's been widely reported. But other than Dolan himself, we haven't seen much dysfunction. We're kind of just letting Leon Rose do his thing. And I think a lot of his tenure, a lot of what we judge him by, is going to be judged by this coaching hire. I think he's going to take it slowly. He's going to take it meticulously. Mind you, we didn't hear anything about Tom Thibodeau from the actual Knicks themselves or as planning people they're planning to hire. I'm interested to see in what they're doing and what they end up doing. But you know, the Knicks, if you've been a Knicks fan at any point in your career, they just find ways to let you down. So I just can't get my hopes up that they're going to do something that makes sense, because at the end of the day, they're still owned by the same person. The Knicks are always going to be the Knicks until they turn a new leaf. And hopefully Leon Rose is the guy who does that.
Find him on Twitter at Chris Blash. You can read him in the New York Daily News covering the Nets and the NBA. Thanks, Christian.
Thank you, Ben, for having me.
There he is, Christian Winfield from the New York Daily News. Big thanks to Christian for jumping on again. Subscribe, like us in iTunes. You can leave us a review if you'd like to. Give us 5 stars. We always appreciate that. Helps us reach a bigger audience. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. And, of course, read me at KSLSports.com. We'll be back with you again. Thanks.